please all sit down? Well, like on your feet. It is my very real pleasure to introduce to you the administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, Dr. T. Keith Glennon.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we are introducing to you and to the world these seven men who have been selected to begin training for orbital space flight. These men, the nation's Project Mercury astronauts, are here after a long and perhaps unprecedented series of evaluations which told our medical consultants and scientists of their superb adaptability to their coming flight. Which of these men will be first to orbit the Earth, I cannot tell you. He won't know himself until the day of the flight. The astronaut training program will last probably 2 years. During this time, our urgent goal is to subject these gentlemen to every stress, each unusual environment they will experience in that flight. Before the first flight, we will have developed our Mercury spaceship to the point where it will be as reliable as man can devise. We expect it to be as reliable as any experimental aircraft. It's my pleasure to introduce to you, and I consider it a very real honor, gentlemen. From your right, Malcolm S. Carpenter, Leroy G. Cooper, John H. Glenn, Virgil I. Grissom, Walter M. Shearer, Alan B. Shepard, Donald K. Slayton. These, ladies and gentlemen, are the nation's Mercury astronauts.
There will be other opportunities for picture taking later in the afternoon. Now, if we can move on, I'd like to introduce six gentlemen, or five gentlemen, who have had a very important part in the selection process and in the planning to date. I introduce them not in the order they will be speaking to you, but in the way it's written down for me here. Dr. Randolph Lovelace, Chairman of the NASA Life Sciences Committee. Dr. Lovelace. Brigadier General Donald Flickinger of the Air Force and Captain Norman Barr of the Navy. They have had the responsibility for selection primarily in the aeromedical field. Also, Robert R. Gilruth, Director of Project Mercury and of the Space Task Group that is working on this project, Bob Gilruth. Charlie Donlan, his assistant. Now I'd like to call upon Bob Gilruth to say a few words.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to be here on this occasion. I'm sure you're all familiar with the objectives of Project Mercury. I don't intend to make any speech whatsoever about it, as I know you're all here primarily to meet our astronauts. Thank you very much.
And now I'd like to call on Dr. Lovelace, who will tell you a little bit about the physical examinations which were given these young men. Dr. Lovelace.
I just hope they never give me a physical exam, because it's been sort of a rough, long period that they've been through. I can tell you that if you pick highly intelligent, highly motivated and intelligent men, and I can say that every one of them is that type of a person, that our job as physicians is a relatively easy one. They are, as you know, family men, and I'm not worried about their stability, their powers of observation, or their powers to accomplish the task which they're given. I can tell you that I'm very, very thrilled that we had a part in the program, and I'm darn glad to know them.
As I believe all of you know, the Air Force participated very importantly in throwing its aeromedical resources to help in our task. Don Flickinger, General Flickinger, may have a few words to say. Don?
Thank you, Walt. I really am here as a spokesman only for the team of scientists that we pulled together at the Aeromed Laboratory in Dayton. We pulled these scientists together from both the Army and the Navy and Air Force resources. This was melded together in a composite team whose objectives were to subject all of the candidates to stresses which most nearly simulated those which we predict the individual will meet in the first orbital flights of Project Mercury. All that I have to say, Walt, is that from our standpoint, the most difficult job was in not taking all of the 31 or 32 that started through. It was really a difficult job, and it's a great tribute, I think, to our Air Force, Navy, and Marine flying personnel that they came through with such flying colors. I've been very proud to be associated with this project, and we on the aeromedical side have learned a great deal from it. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Gentlemen, you photographers, please, I'm afraid we're going to have to ask you to sit down. We've tried to give this as much of a break to everybody as possible. We have limited facilities, as all of us are experiencing. The boys with the long lenses in back do have problems, and so please, will you sit down? And this includes the young man with the telephoto lens. No, I'll ask you not to take pictures until after we get through with the Q&A. We have to do it this way, please. And now I'd like to call on Captain Norman Barr.
Thank you very much. I'm quite sure that no finer group of men could have been selected by the tests that are available to us today. All of us are very sure that the correct men have been selected for this program. These men have been chosen from a population of about 180 million to represent the United States in this important project, and we are all behind them 100%.
Thank you, Captain Barr, and now I call on Charlie Donlan, who is Bob Gilroy's right-hand man.
There's little I can add to what's been said, except that we're delighted, of course, to have these astronauts with us. They bring to the program a wide range of experience in engineering, test flying, and other scientific and engineering disciplines. And I hope we're going to have a chance to work with them in a bigger proportion than we have had to today.
Thank you, Charlie. And now we come to the Q&A. I would ask you, ladies and gentlemen, to address your questions to me. I will repeat them, and then we'll get them answered. Peter?
I'd like to ask Lieutenant Carpenter if his wife has had anything to say about this and or his four children.
Talking to the mic. They're all as enthusiastic about the program as I am.
How about the others, Walt? Same question.
Suppose we go down the line 1, 2, 3 on that. The question is, has your good lady and have your children had anything to say about this?
Yes, mine have. Mine are very enthusiastic also. I can answer the same for myself.
I don't think any of us could really go on with something like this if we didn't have pretty good backing at home, really. On my wife's attitude toward this has been the same as it has been all along through all my flying, that if it's what I want to do, and she's behind it, and the kids are too, 100%.
Well, my wife feels the same way, or of course I couldn't be here. She's with me all the way, and the boys are too little to realize what's going on yet, but I'm sure they feel the same way.
My wife has agreed that professional opinions are mine, career is mine, but we also have to have a family life that we like, and this is part of the agreement. I can't say much for my youngest daughter. She's only 18 months, but my son does have quite an interest in the program.
I have no problems at home. My family's in complete agreement.
Well, I can't add anything to what the other gentleman said. What I do is pretty much my business, professional-wise, and my wife normally goes along with it 100%.
Next question, please. The question is, we have three Air Force, three Navy, and one Marine. Was this on purpose? I'd like to answer that one, if I might, because I was born in Vermont, which is almost as bad as being born in Missouri from the standpoint of looking things at things with a somewhat jaundiced eye. I said, how came it came out this way? Randy Lovelace tells me, Bob Gilruth tells me, everyone associated with the project tells me that they did it by numbers and not by service, and it just happened that way. Next question.
I noticed that the three gentlemen on our left have been smoking. I wonder what they're going to do for cigarettes.
The question is, and the Tobacco Trust, please close your ears, that it is noticed that three of our seven young men are smoking. What will they be doing when they get up in the capsule? Perhaps, Randy, you might tackle that one.
Well, I think they're pretty mature men, and we'll leave it up to them in large part. Of course, we have a few months for an indoctrination program.
Let's take a poll. How many of you gentlemen smoke?
I'll have to qualify it myself. I quit
three and a half. I quit once for 3.5 days.
The words high motivation have been used here today and earlier. What is the motivation of these men?
The question is, what is the motivation of these men? Let's try that, starting from the left and go down.
Well, get them to give their hometown and with
yes, I think if you gentlemen will give your hometown and your age as you do this, this will be helpful to the boys on the lenses and also to the reporters.
Their name, first of all, Bob.
Name, full name, age, and hometown, please.
Okay, my full name is Donald K. Slayton, and my hometown is Sparta, Wisconsin. And my age is 35. And I'm in the Air Force. As far as my motivation is concerned, I feel that this is the future of not only this country, but the world. We've gone about as far as we can on this globe, and we have to start looking around a bit. And it's just the natural expansion of flight. And consider it in that light. It's merely an extension of flight. We have to go somewhere, and that's all that's left. And I'd wasn't around when all the initial exploration was done in this country and around the world, and this is an excellent opportunity to be in on something new, the beginning of it.
Alan B. Shepherd from East Derry, New Hampshire, and I am also 35. I don't think there's any question that we are on the threshold of space travel. We have seen many evidences along that line. Project Mercury is just one part of the endeavor towards space travel. I quite personally am intensely interested in it and just delighted to have been given the opportunity to participate.
My name is Walter Shirah, Walter M. Shirah, Jr. I originally came from Oradell, New Jersey. I think in my answer to what is my motivation, I think it's typical of most of us in this country. We're interested in new things. Aviation has been a new thing. Now it's a 50-year-old thing. I might add that talking to my mother just recently, asking her if she had any anxieties about this, I had an answer. My father was one of the very early aviators. His parents faced the same problem. So I feel this is an expansion in another dimension, much as aviation was an expansion off the surface of the Earth.
I'm Virgil I. Grissom from Mitchell, Indiana. Oh, my
How
career...
How old are you, Mitchell?
33.
I didn't say.
My career has been serving the nation, serving the country, and here's another opportunity where they need my talents, and I'm most grateful for an opportunity to serve in this capacity.
I'm John Glenn. I'm the lonesome Marine on this outfit, and I'm 37. In answer to this same question a few days ago from someone else, I've jokingly, of course, said that I got on this project because it'd probably be the nearest to heaven I'd ever get, and I wanted to make the most of it. But my feelings are that this whole project with regard to space sort of stands with us now as, if you want to look at it one way, like the Wright brothers stood at Kitty Hawk about 50 years ago with Orville and Wilbur pitching a coin to see who was going to shove the other one off the hill down there. And I think that we stand on the verge of something as big and as expansive as that was 50 years ago. I also agree wholeheartedly with Gus here on, I think we are very fortunate that we have, should we say, been blessed with the talents that have been picked for something like this. And I think we'd be almost remiss in our duty if we didn't make full use of our talents. Every one of us would feel guilty, I think, if we didn't make the fullest use of our talents in volunteering for something that is as important as this is to our country and the world in general right now. This can mean an awful lot to this country, of course. Thank you.
I'm Leroy G. Cooper, Jr., Carbondale, Colorado, age 32. Yeah. It's always a disadvantage to have to speak last, of course, but I think the others have expressed it very well in that I think we're motivated by, I myself, I should say, am motivated by the fact that I am a career officer, a career pilot, and this is something new and very interesting to be in.
Malcolm Scott Carpenter from Boulder, Colorado. I'm 33. I think we are all of a mind on this motivation question. It's a chance to serve the country in a very noble cause, and it certainly is a chance to pioneer on a grand scale. I'm very happy and proud to have been given the opportunity.
Thank you, gentlemen. And next question, Miss Craig, please.
What element of suitability is there about being a family man that eliminated all the bachelors?
General Flickinger is a bachelor, and he laughs, so I think we'll give him the chance to answer that question. The question is, all of these men are very demonstrably family men. Why is it that family men were picked instead of bachelors? Don, as a bachelor, answer that, please.
Walt, the only thing I can say is that the medical statistics prove that married men live longer than bachelors, and we hope to keep these people in the project a real long time.
Well, I can say it doesn't always seem that way to a married man, but Ed.
Another question is their age. Are men over 30 more stable, reliable, or what?
The question is, what about their age? Are men over 30 more stable, more reliable, or what? Captain Barr, perhaps you might like to answer that one.
In addition, of course, to the medical qualifications, there were certain other qualifications. For example, these men had to have a technical background in a subject related to this new specialty. They had to have about 1,500 hours as pilots of jet-type aircraft. They had to know meteorology, some astronomy, navigation, many other basic sciences. You could not find younger men than these who meet these qualifications.
Dr. Lovelace said that the men had a few months for indoctrination. You want to give an educated guess as to how many months before?
The question is, quoting Dr. Lovelace, that there'd be several months for indoctrination. How long would this take? The answer to that, and if I might try to provide it instead of Dr. Lovelace, it would be that these men will be in training and getting experience right up until the time that they will be making their flights, which, as Dr. Glennon said earlier this afternoon, will be in a couple of years, we hope. Bill Levitt?
One of these gentlemen will make the initial flight, but will the other six, is it scheduled that they'll make subsequent flights?
The question is, there are seven gentlemen. One of them, obviously, has got to be first. Will the others also participate? Indeed, they will. They will participate all the way through, and this is one reason why we cut the number from 12 to 7, perhaps the most important single reason for cutting from 12 to 7, so to give all of them a maximum participation in the program. We expect to make more than one orbital flight by far. Peter?
When the final day comes around, or the final week, whatever it is, how will the final selection be made and by whom?
When the final day or week or hour comes around, how will the selection process be made and by whom? I think perhaps Bob Gillis might like to tackle that one insofar as he can at this time.
I think you're asking for a lot in that question, inasmuch as we have so far yet to go in the Mercury program, not only pilot training-wise, but hardware-wise. All of these models of the capsule that you see, the systems that we've talked about, have all yet to be translated into real hardware. This real hardware has to be tested, retested, and where it's found wanting, it has to be corrected and proven out. We're still a very long ways from being far enough down the road to answer when we'll have the final system and just how we'll go about picking the best qualified man at the time.
I might add a footnote to that. I had the privilege last evening of meeting these gentlemen down at Langley for the first time. And my guess is that it's going to have to be pretty much a matter of drawing straws, because all seven of them should be first. Bob?
Can I ask for a show of hands of how many are confident they will come back from outer space?
The question is, for a show of hands from you seven, as to how many of you are confident you're going to come back?
Another one there?
And Norm, who's old and a coward like me, also raises his hand, too. Paulie?
What lies immediately ahead of these men? Will they continue in their normal service assignments, or will they...
No, they will not. The question is, what will happen to these men? Will they continue their normal service assignment? They will not. They will shift over to NASA as soon as they can get their families moved down to Langley Field. They will participate in the program in the most intimate sort of way. As the biods will show, they all have engineering backgrounds. They'll be working on the hardware. They'll be working on the systems. They will also be in very intensively carrying on a training program.
As of now, which do you expect to finish first, the space vehicle or the training program?
The question is, as of now, which will finish first, the space vehicle or the training program? And the answer is, if it's not a dead heat, we aren't doing our job right.
Well, as we understand it, then, these seven men are going to be taken along together at every stage in their preparation.
The question is, as understood, all seven will be carried along as a team, participating in concert in every step of the program. The answer is 100% correct. Paul? The question is, what salary will these gentlemen receive as civil servants and as astronauts? The question is their service pay. I think this is correct.
They remain in the service?
They remain in the service detached to NASA.
Will there be hazardous duty pay involved?
Question, will there be hazardous duty pay involved? Bob?
Well,
This is correct. That there will be hazardous duty pay involved.
Normal.
It's the equivalent of flight pay.
Is it the same flight pay they're going now? The flight pay or is it?
It's the same as flight pay. In other words, they don't get a dime extra. The question is, were any civilian test pilots considered, or was the selection process limited to the military test pilots? The answer to that is that the selection process was limited to the military test pilots. It was a purely arbitrary decision because we knew that the records on these people were available. We could run them through the machines and very quickly make a first-cut selection from an elite group. Phil?
Say these men will be detached to NASA, will they be eligible for a military promotion?
The question is, they will be detached from military duty and assigned to NASA. Will they be eligible for promotion in the military? And the answer is, yes, indeed, they will.
Bob?
Phil?
I'm still hanging on this one point. Is it planned that each one of these seven will make orbital flights?
To the extent possible. The question is, Phil Goulding asks, is it planned that all seven will make orbital flights? To the extent practicable, the answer is yes. We expect to bring the capsules back. We expect to use them more than once.
Where will these flights go?
I'd like to get back to the astronaut for a minute if we could. It would be interesting if we could hear briefly from each of them what his sustaining faith is. Many of them have a particularly strong religious faith, or the motivation of service to the country. What are they hanging on to?
Getting back to the motivation, the question is, what is the sustaining faith of the gentleman? What is the basic motivation? Again, let's start from our brother Carpenter here.
We got time. We got time to figure something out.
As far as I'm concerned, my sustaining faith, I think, is in the fact that I believe we have the best minds in the country behind this project.
Maybe I'd like to clarify this question. Do you mean by sustaining faith, our sustaining faith in life or in the project itself? Or?
My feeling was that you men are obviously risking your lives. We all of us hang on to something as we go through life and feel that if we're risking our life, it's worth it. And also, take care of that. I would like to know if any of you have a religious...
Yes, for myself, I am a Christian. I'm a Methodist. And I think religion is definitely, to those who are Christians, is definitely a sustaining aid. Likewise, I believe that I have faith in the people that I'm working with in this program, of their talent, and that the program will definitely be a success.
Before we get to the next one, let's go back to Carpenter and let him fill out that particular question so as we'll get a full reading on this.
If the question involved religious faith, I have that, although I don't call on it particularly associated with this project. I'm an Episcopalian. I'm a faithful churchgoer when it's possible. I think this might help sustain me also.
As far as faith in the program goes, to cover that part of it, yes, I have all the faith in the world in the people running this thing. If we didn't think that we had the finest brains in the country working on this thing, I'm sure all of us would look at it with a pretty jaundiced eye here. We're pretty new to this, to our dealings with the people in this program so far, naturally, but from what we have seen and what we know of the people so far, we have a lot of faith in them. As far as religious affiliations go, I'm a Presbyterian, Protestant Presbyterian, and take my religion very seriously, as a matter of fact. I've taught Sunday school in the Presbyterian Church, and I was on the Board of Trustees at the last duty station and a few things like that. And as far as we're very active in church work and kids in Sunday school and all the things connected with the church work, my own feelings as far as religious background on this are... It's very easy, I think, and you'll find a lot of pilots who like to take what I consider to be sort of a crutch and look at this thing completely from a fatalistic standpoint of sometime I'm going to die, and so I can do anything I want in the meantime, and it doesn't make any difference because when my time comes, I'm going anyway. Well, this is not what I believe. I was brought up believing that you're placed on Earth here more or less with sort of a 50-50 proposition, and this is what I still believe. Yeah. We're placed here with certain talents and capabilities. It's up to each one of us to use those talents and capabilities as best he can. And if you do that, the opportunities will be... I think there's a power greater than any of us that will place the opportunities in our way, and if we use our talents properly, we'll be living the kind of life we should live. This is the way I look at this whole program. I look at it, if I use the talents and capabilities I happen to have been given to the best of my ability, I think there is a power greater than I am that will certainly see that I'm taken care of if I do my part of the bargain.
Well, I consider myself religious. I'm a Protestant, belong to the Church of Christ, and I'm not real active in the church as Mr. Glenn is, but I consider myself a good Christian still, and I usually hold Sunday school. Glenn said, I have faith in the people I'm working with, the people that are working on the capsule.
I have followed the Episcopal Church as my faith. I am not an active participant in church activities. I think I should like to dwell more on the faith in what we've called the machine age. We've got to face the space age. The remarks the other fellows have made about the best minds in the country involved in this project obviously has to apply. All of us have had faith in mechanical objects. We've been driving cars, some not successfully. We've been flying airplanes, some not successfully. And I think the space program also will have some problems in it. But again, you have to believe that we are trying to do something and we're going to do it as well as we can.